यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तेरा वनाचार्य जमुना तेरा वनाचार्यम जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ रे वराधारी जय जय गोपी जन्ना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय ओ यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन 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 जमुना तेरा वनाचार्य यमुना यमुना तेरा वनाचार्य जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय रा जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य स्तोत्र श्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय श्री श्री राधा वृंदावन बिहारी की जय श्री गौरांग महाप्रभु की जय श्री श्री राधा मदन मोहन ललिता देवी की जय श्री ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय निताय गौर प्रमानंदी हरि हरि बो
Hare Krishna. I was asked by Balaram Shaktipu to select a verse of my choice. So I chose this verse. It's one of my favorite in the eighth canto of Bhagavatam, and so it's out of your regular sequence, but I think this week, anyway, we've been out of sequence. So please repeat.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Baleruvacha. Aho Pranamaya Krita Samudyama. Prapanna Bhaktartha Vidho Samahita. Yallo Kapala Istvadanugraho Marae. Alabdha Purvo Pasade Surir Pita. Aho Pranamaya Krita Samudyama. Prapanna Bhaktartha Vidho Samahita. Yallo Kapala Istvadanugraho Marae. Alabdha Purvo Pasade Surir Pita. Aho Pranamaya Krita Samudyama. Prapanna Bhaktartha Vidho Samahita. Yallo Kapala Istvadanugraho Marae. Alabdha Purvo Pasade Surir Pita. Aho Pranamaya Krita Samudyama.
Ladies, Pranamaya Krita Samudyama. Prapanna Bhaktartha Vidau Samahita. Kapalai Svadanugraho Marae. Alabdha Purvo Pasade Surir Pita. Shri Bali Uvacha. Bali Maharaj said, Aho, alas, Pranamaya, to offer my respectful obeisances. Kritaha, I did. Samudyama, only an endeavor. Prapanna Bhakta Arthavidho, in the regulative principles observed by pure devotees. Samahita is capable. Yat, that Lokapalai by the leaders of various planets. Tvat Anugraha, your causeless mercy. Amarai by the demigods. Alabdhapurva, not achieved previously. Apasade, unto a fallen person like me. Asure, belonging to the Asura community. Arpita, endowed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavor to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. Please repeat. Bali Maharaj said, what a wonderful effect there is in even attempting to offer respectful obeisances to you. I merely endeavored to offer you obeisances, but nonetheless the attempt was as successful as those of pure devotees. The causeless mercy you have shown to me, a fallen demon, was never achieved even by the demigods or the leaders of the various planets. So Srila Prabhupada's purport here is really beautiful. It's not too long, but very eloquent. When Vamandev appeared before Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj immediately wanted to offer him respectful obeisances. But he was unable to do so because of the presence of Shukracharya and other demoniac associates. The Lord is so merciful, however, that although Bali Maharaj did not actually offer obeisances, but only endeavored to do so within his mind, the Supreme Personality of God had blessed him with more mercy than even the demigods could ever expect. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhavagrahi Janardana because he takes only the essence of a devotee's attitude. If a devotee sincerely surrenders, the Lord, as the supersoul in everyone's heart, immediately understands this. Thus, even though externally a devotee may not render full service, if he is internally sincere and serious, the Lord welcomes his service nonetheless. Thus, the Lord is known as Bhavagrahi Janardana because he takes the essence of one's devotional mentality. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, I want to talk about this verse, but I want to lead up to it first, to help us understand the significance and the impact of what Bali Maharaj is saying here. The story of Vamandev is a very, very old story. This is, of course, near the end of the story. The Lord has already done whatever he needed to, and Bali Maharaj is now, the whole thing is about to close very soon in a few verses. This story of Vamanadev, or of the Lord as Trivikrama, the one who takes three steps and covers the universe, is a story that is found all throughout the Vedas. If we look at as early as the Rig Veda, the earliest reference to Lord Vishnu in the Vedic literature is the one who takes three steps. And for this reason, he is known in the Rig Veda as the great strider, Urukrama, the one who takes, Uru means wide and Krama means steps, the one who takes big steps, the great strider. And all the way back from that time, from the point of the Rig Vedas, through all the Puranas, again and again and again, this story of Vamanadeva has been told. It's been repeated multiple times. And each time it's repeated, in each case, the hero of the story is always Vamanadeva, is Trivikrama, is the Lord who is able to cover the universe with his multiple steps. It's only when we get to the Srimad Bhagavatam that we come to recognize someone else as the hero of the story, the one who is actually taking great steps. And that is not someone who is a great Brahmana, not someone who is also a classical Kshatriya king, not someone who is a great tapasvi or a rishi, but someone who is a demon, who is Daityaraj, and that's Bali Maharaj. So this is the Vamandev story is especially useful for understanding the mood of Srimad Bhagavatam as a whole. Muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka. This Bhagavatam nigama kalpa taror galitam phalam. It says, Bhagavatam begins by saying, this is the ripened fruit of the desire tree of nigama. Nigama means the Vedas. And so it's useful to try to trace the connection between Bhagavatam and the Vedas. Because Bhagavat is saying that if the Vedas were a tree, I am the fruit. So what is the connection with the Veda? And by Veda, the original Veda is, of course, the four Samhitas, Rig, Yajur, Sam, and Atharva. So it's not always easy to find a connection between Krishna's Damodar Lila and Rig Veda. Or although there are acharyas who have made such connections, they have found Vrindavan Lila even in Rig Veda. Because there was one author named Nilakanta Chaturdhara, who was famous actually for writing a commentary on Mahabharata. But he wrote also a book called Mantra Bhagavata. And mantra, he meant the Vedas, and Bhagavata is Bhagavatam. The story of the Bhagavatam found in Rig Veda. So he talks about, he reads the Rig Veda and finds, literally he finds Vrindavan Leela within the verses of Rig Veda. This is, we don't even have to go to Nilakanta. In our own sampradaya, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana, in his Prameya Ratnavali, he mentions specifically, he quotes this one verse from Rig Veda. I don't have it memorized. But it talks about bhuri gavaha, long-horned cows. And there are two people who are taking care of these cows. So, of course, immediately he explains that this is Krishna and Srimati Radharani, or Krishna and Balaram, maybe he says, and the cows of Vrindavan and everything. So he quotes this as an evidence. So anyway, generally though, outside the vision of the great sages, it's not easy to find that connection, except in certain stories where that connection is very, very ancient, such as the story of Vamanadev. But also, there's another story that is found in Rig Veda, which is found in Bhagavat again. And that is the story of Vritrasura. Vritrasura is a very, very ancient story. In the Rig Veda, Indra is primarily known as the one who kills Vritra. This is his greatest act in the Rig Veda, is the killer of Vritra. And he is the hero for killing Vritrasura. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, again, the story shifts. Srila Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, he gives a quotation which tries to define what is Bhagavata, because there can be some confusion. Some people argue that it might be Devi Bhagavata, or someone might say, this is Bhagavata. So he defines what is Bhagavata. And in that verse, it says that Bhagavata is that book, Vritrasura Vadhopetam, that book which is containing the story of Vritrasura. Now, initially, this is both confusing and amusing, because you think that book which contains the story of Vritrasura, this is the one story that you would not want to choose, because every book tells this story, right? As a unique characteristic of Bhagavata, if you say that book which tells the story of Vritrasura, you can choose any book as Bhagavata, because from the Rig Veda to the Brahmanas and through all the Puranas, the story of Vritrasura is told again and again and again and again. So you might wonder, I wondered when I read that, why of all the stories, he's choosing the story of Vritrasura, when he could have said the story of Brahma Vimohan Leela. That's genuinely a story that is only found in Srimad Bhagavatam. So then you can uniquely identify, right? But no, he says Vritrasura Vadhopetam. That story, which is that book, which contains the story of Vritrasura. And the reason is the same that we've been discussing. That although every book tells the story of Vritrasura, no book tells that story the way Bhagavatam tells it. Because in every story, the hero is Lord Indra. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the hero is Vritra. The one who is the demon who meant to be destroyed, that one is the one who emerges actually. He's a vicious demon still, like in the Rig Veda. He's got his copper red eyes and red hair and big mustache and very dangerous demeanor and huge high body, tall body. And yet he's got a heart that is so soft, a heart that is soft like butter. And so inspired to die. Because he knows this is the Rig Veda story. I have to die, right? He says in Bhagavatam, he says, it is predicted that you will kill me. Right? Predicted where? In Rig Veda. The Vedas are apaurusheya. They are eternal. They're never written, they're never created by any human being. Right? They're always there. So Vritrasura knows his own story is in the Rig Veda. And he's saying, it's already predicted. You know, here it is in Sukta. In the words of the Vedas, you're going to kill me, Indra. So Indra, at one point, he's fighting and he gets really depressed because he can't kill Vritrasura. So he tells him, my story is in the Rig Veda. It's already told you're going to kill me. So come on, get up and kill me. Finish the job. This is meant to happen. It's predicted. You kill me and you get to rule heaven. Imagine that. And you kill me and I get to go back to Godhead. Imagine that. It's like, kill me, finish the work, and let me go. And you stay here and rule this material world. I don't care. I'm going to a better place. Right? So this is Bhagavatam's uniqueness. Vritrasura Vadhopetam. So besides the story of Vritra, this story of Vamanadev is also one that is told way far back in the Rig Veda. The Lord is the great hero, the great strider, the one who takes three steps. And he is glorified again and again in every Purana. Until we come to Srimad Bhagavatam, in which, of course, the Lord is glorified again. But the one who emerges as the true hero of the story is Bali Maharaj. Now, let's just take a moment to think about what Bali Maharaj has gone through up to this point. He's received Vamanadev, the little boy who looks so sweet and so innocent. And as Vamanadev has asked him for three steps of land, his guru Shukracharya has predicted to the T exactly what's going to happen. He's warned him that he's asking three steps, but he will take everything from you. So Bali Maharaj is not going into this blindly. He is cheated, but not unknowingly. He knows exactly what's going to happen. It's like going into Chandni Chowk and showing a wallet full of money, and then being surprised that someone has pickpocketed you. You know what's going to happen, right? This is the result. He knows. Shukracharya has told him this is what's going to happen, and yet Bali Maharaj says that no. If Vishnu is coming to beg in front of me, what could be a matter of greater pride? That Lord himself is coming to ask me something. Why shall I not give? So the Lord gives him this whole lecture about three steps of land. Right? Bali says, take as much, he tells this boy, take as much that you nor any one of your descendants never has to ask anyone again. Not three steps. This is insulting me. And the Lord gives this wonderful lecture about how we have to be satisfied. And if we cannot be satisfied in three paces of land, we won't be satisfied with the whole world. Which is all, of course, very ironic because the Lord is not satisfied with just three steps of land. So he's preaching to himself, essentially. And of course, we know in the first step, he covers everything below. And in the second step, he covers everything above. And after he takes everything, and Bali Maharaj is there under him with everyone else. At that point, the Lord has cheated Bali Maharaj successfully of everything he owns, while initially saying that he would not take anything except for 3 paces of land. He takes everything, and then the Lord has the courage, the gall, to turn around and then insult Bali Maharaj and say that you promised me 3 steps of land, you've only given me 2. Not just you have broken your promise, but you are now a black mark on your entire family. No one in your family has behaved as poorly as you have. So he's being accused of bringing down the honor of his entire family after being cheated. And then Bali Maharaj says, okay, I can try to remedy that. You see, the Lord has taken everything from Bali at this point, except for one thing he has not yet taken. And that is his own ego, his false ego. What is that ego? That I am the one giving charity. This is a very subtle form of possessiveness, of pride. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam jnatvamam shantim richati. One who knows me to be bhokta, the enjoyer of all austerities and sacrifices, sarvaloka maheshwaram, and the Lord of all the worlds, and finally, the friend of all living entities. So in the first 2 steps, Bali Maharaj makes it very clear that he understands that Sarvaloka Maheshwaram is not him, but Krishna. And often we can come to that understanding that actually nothing belongs to me. Everything will be taken away at the point of death. But even as we are ready to give all our possessions to the Lord, even as we're willing to divest ourselves of everything we have and walk the path of renunciation, even then, there's something subtle that can still remain. And that is the conception that Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, that I am the friend of all living entities. That I am the one who will give welfare to everyone. That I can help people. This is subtle because it can be very easily mistaken for being generous, being kind, being compassionate, which are all Vaishnav qualities. But a Vaishnav's generosity or compassion is founded on the compassion or generosity of the Lord. It's founded on the idea that it is the Lord who is generous and compassionate, not me. But the conception that I am the one who will help is actually the foundation of us developing a sense of false pride. So Bali Maharaj has given up the Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, I am the controller, I am the maintainer, and I am all of that. But he's still thinking, I can be people's friends. I am the one who is giving charity to others. I am the friend. This is the founding conception of my country, the United States of America. Right? You know the Statue of Liberty? Maybe you've heard of this. What is the motto on the Statue of Liberty? She says, it's written there, give me your poor, give me your tired, give me your huddled masses. She's holding the torch. I will take care of everyone. This was the message that greeted generations of people coming by ship. It greeted Srila Prabhupada also. Coming by ship onto Ellis Island, where they cleared immigration a long time ago. And yet, today, what has become of that message? Now, that same Statue of Liberty is saying, no, I can't handle so many poor, tired, and huddled masses. You refugees, stay in Mexico. Right? Don't come here. Why? Because we're not Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. We're not the friend of all living entities. Even a country as great as America has its limits. Even that country at some point is saying, no, we've had enough. Now the rest is for us. Even a king as great as Bali Maharaj cannot be the friend of all living entities. He thinks, therefore he says, ask so much that nor you, nor your children, nor your grandchildren will have to ask anyone ever again, because I am the friend of all living entities. And now Krishna is determined, I'm going to divest you of even this subtle anartha and show you that you cannot be anyone's friend without me. I am the friend of all living entities. And so then he takes his final step. Bali Maharaj says, upon my head, O Lord. And with that step, Bali Maharaj's promise has been fulfilled. So you can think, now he's still got his pride. He still has his sense of dignity. Yes, I did it. Three steps, I made it. Even the Lord tried to cheat him. But Krishna's not done. Even now he's not done. He asks Garuda to bind him with the ropes of Varuna. Like an animal, he's bound and humiliated. Bhagavatam says that he's got his head hanging down low, humbled. And when he's giving charity, he's remembering his father and his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. Yes? That they were so wonderful. They're such great devotees. I want to follow in their example. And so Prahlad Maharaj actually comes. He shows up. And what does he say? He takes the opportunity to yet again criticize Bali Maharaj. He says, my Lord, you are so wonderful. What is wonderful about the Lord's action? Nothing. Krishna has cheated. Then he's insulted the one he has cheated. And then he has humiliated him. And everyone there is saying, oh Lord, you are so wonderful. Prahlad Maharaj is saying, you are so kind on this demon. We are born in a family of demons, and by taking everything away from us, you show us your mercy. Bali Maharaj is getting no relief from anywhere. His own grandfather is coming and criticizing him. Imagine that. Imagine what's going through his mind at this point. It says, Bhagavatam says, that when Garuda tied him with Varuna's ropes, bound him, there was a great cry of lamentation, ha-ha-kar, in all the worlds. Why? Because everyone can see what Bali Maharaj is going through. Everyone can see it. It's not that, you know, people are oblivious. They don't have their intelligence. They can't see what this man has been through. We can see it. They could see it. They're all lamenting. Look at what's happening. This poor man, with his own might, he conquered the world. Not by cheating. He fought the devas properly. Did his dharma. Owned the three worlds, and the Lord has cheated him of everything. Then he's insulted him. Then he's bound him. Oh, look at what's happening to him. Except for Krishna's own associates, Nanda and Sunanda and all of them, everyone is on Bali Maharaj's side at this point. All the worlds lamenting for him. After all this happens, Brahma is ready to speak. But before he can talk, someone else must say something. And this is Bali Maharaj's wife, Vindhyavali. She comes running, and Bhagavatam says that she's very agitated. She's upset, naturally. Her husband has been treated like this. And so even Lord Brahma, he backs off. He understands that she needs to say something. We should let her. And what does she say? She adds more fuel to the fire. She says, my husband, you punished him. Why? Not because he gave in charity, but because he thought he had something to give in charity. When everything actually belongs to you. How could anyone give anything in charity? Imagine now Bali Maharaj's condition. The last person a husband wants to hear criticism from is his wife, especially in public. And here she is, standing in front of all the devas and all the asuras, and saying, yes, my husband deserved this. Now, to her defense, I should mention that Bali Maharaj has not been completely innocent in this regard. Just 3 or 4 verses before, in speaking to the Lord, you know what he said? He said, what is the use of all this material attachment? What is the use of a wife? He's just criticized. Said, what is the use of a wife? Now, she's there. She's been your partner as you've conquered the 3 worlds. She's stood next to your side, and she's helped you out. And he's there in front of the Lord saying, what is the use of this wife? So she has her right also. She's no fool, right? She's intelligent, and she's philosophically one step ahead of him. He's saying renunciation is the path. I should renounce the world, renounce my wife, renounce my kids. And she's saying, acha, you want to renounce? Well, why do you think that you have something to renounce? You're so foolish. You think that we belong to you. That's what you think. Therefore, I'm going to renounce it for the Lord. But we never belong to you. Everything belongs to the Lord. You have nothing left to renounce. You never had anything to renounce. And it's that conception that the Lord is freeing you from now. He's divesting you of that sense that you had something at all, that anything was yours. So think about now, what is Bali Maharaj's condition? He's been cheated. He's lost everything he worked hard for. He's been insulted. He's been physically bound up. He's been laughed at by his own grandfather and his own wife. And at this point, finally, Lord Brahma steps in. In fact, before this, Bali Maharaj tells Krishna, he says, no one treats another person like you have treated me. No friend, no well-wisher, no family member. No one treats another person like you have treated me. Isn't it? It's a fact, no? I mean, think about the worst situation you can imagine. Maybe you've been mistreated at some point in life by someone. There's always a limit. There's always a point at which something stops. Someone may physically insult us. Someone may emotionally insult us. But Bali Maharaj has gotten everything. Physically, emotionally, mentally. Everyone, Krishna has just been at him. And he says, no one does what you've done to me. And so Brahma steps in. He says, you know, Krishna, this is enough. Bahut ho gaya. How much are you going to make this poor man suffer? You know, this is the role of Brahmaji. He does it many times in Bhagavatam. Because it's the role of the seniors in any community. Those who are senior most, it's their job that, okay, you know, we young people, we have to fight, we have to do our thing, we have our goals. But when you're that senior and you've seen the world, you've seen everything, there comes a time where, you know, okay, you have enough vision to say, okay, let's be peaceful. Everything is okay. To mend the fabric once it's been torn, to build bridges after those bridges have been broken. In the story of Sanatan Goswami and Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, right? Rupa Goswami gets upset at Sri Jiva and sends him off banishes him from Vrindavan. Then it's Sanatan Goswami who comes and says that, what are you doing? Please, have mercy. Jive Daya. Have mercy on Jiva Goswami. He's suffered enough. He's learned the lesson you want to teach him. So this is the role of the senior most. Sanatana Goswami is the eldest in Vrindavan. Everyone looks to him for that reason. So he provides some stability. This is such an important role that seniors have. They may not run around. They may not, do big, heavy lifting stuff. But their contribution is something that is intangible, yet very powerful. Just providing stability to a community is okay. Everyone can be peaceful. And so Brahma says this. He says, look, you know, I think this is enough. You've done enough, my Lord. He's learned his lesson. You please be merciful to him. And that's the point at which the Lord softens. And at that point, the Lord switches, 180 degree turn, from taking, to giving. He says, you can go down, you will become the king of heaven, but before you become the king of heaven and rule legitimately what you had to fight for, I will give you rule in this position of Indra. You can have, before that, the planet of Sutala, the subterranean heavenly planets, and I will be there personally as your guard, as the guard at your gate. And anyone who dares to cross you will be destroyed by my Sudarshan Chakra. So imagine now the emotional shift that Bali Maharaj has gone through. He's just been crushed by the Lord, and now the Lord is showering his mercy upon him. You know, when all this crushing is happening by the Lord, physically, emotionally, socially, the Lord is taking. The whole, all the three worlds is crying in lamentation. Everyone is lamenting in support of Bali Maharaj, except for one person, and that's Bali himself. The Lord is taking. Everyone is crying, except Bali Maharaj. He's experiencing symptoms of ecstasy. And when the Lord finally opens his heart and gives to Bali Maharaj, Bali has just one verse to say. That's it. He just says one verse. And that's this one here. Whole story is done. He's been through all this experience, more intense than anyone can imagine. Any one of us, we would have to spend hours talking to a psychologist at this point. And Bali Maharaj has one word to say, one verse. What does he say? I'll read the verse before that because it's really beautiful. He says, Shukadeva Goswami is saying, when the supreme, ancient, eternal personality of Godhead had thus spoken to Bali Maharaj, who is universally accepted as a pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore a great soul, Bali Maharaj, his eyes filled with tears, his hands folded, and his voice faltering in devotional ecstasy, responded as follows. He's in great ecstasy. He's in great joy. He tells the Lord, my Lord, you have given me that gift which others can, the demigods cannot even hope for. Those lotus feet which people have to work hard day in and day out. They have to do great tapasya and yajna and dana in order to approach your lotus feet. And still you push them away. Still they do not see your feet. You have forcibly taken me and pushed me under those lotus feet. Why? Why do I deserve such mercy? because I did not even do what these other people have done. I did not even put in the effort that they did. All I did, aho pranamaya, I just tried, samudyama, I just tried to offer you obeisances. I couldn't even actually do it because I'm surrounded by all these demons and I'm their king. And I have to maintain some status and some position, isn't it? Sometimes in our own lives, I mean, I really like this verse because I'm a grihastha and I have a job and I have workplace and this and that. And sometimes I'm in situations where I'm not able to properly express myself as a devotee. Someone will say something about Krishna or about Bhagavatam, critical, academic, you know, criticizing. And I have to say, interesting point, you know. You might want to also look at it this way. What I actually want to say is, you have no idea what you're talking about. But no, you have to be contained. You can't. You cannot offer obeisances to Krishna. You can't show your commitment to the Lord. This is his problem, he's saying, no? Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that I had to offer obeisances to you in my mind. I could not show my commitment to you. Why? Because there's Shukracharya and he's my guru. And he doesn't like you. So I have to maintain. And these are demons. And we spent our days fighting with Vishnu. So I cannot show publicly what is my intent. It's just like Vibhishan, right? In Ramayana. Ramayana says that Vibhishan lived in Lanka like the tongue lives between two rows of teeth. Always dangerous. At any point, he could be bitten. Sometimes we do bite our tongue. It's very painful. So he had to be very careful, very careful. So in our own lives, sometimes we can find that situation. We can be in that condition. And he's saying, I could not even properly worship you. And yet, look at the result that you gave me. You gave me full shelter under your lotus feet, something that even the demigods do not get. Chaitanya? That even the demigods do not get. How grateful I am to you. Everything that he has been through up to this point that we have discussed is culminating in one verse expressing what? Gratitude. Gratitude towards the Lord. People always say, you know, you should count your blessings. Thank God for all the good things he has given you. Remember how good your life is. You have this that's nice, this that's nice, this that. That the practice of gratitude, there's many gratitude coaches, they talk about this. Every day, remember, write down one thing that you are thankful for. One thing that is good in your life. That's gratitude and that's good. But this takes gratitude to another level. It takes it to another level altogether. How about being grateful, not for all the good things that we have received in life? What about being grateful for all the bad things we have received? For all the struggles and the troubles and the difficulties. That's what he's being grateful for here. He's not being grateful for Sutala. He hasn't seen Sutala yet. He doesn't know what's to come. He's not feeling grateful for that the Lord will protect me. He already knows that. What he's saying I'm grateful for is the fact that you have created circumstances which have forced me under your lotus feet. I am grateful for all that you have given me, all this trouble, all this pain, all this difficulty. And he's feeling ecstasy remembering it. This is what we call gratitude. Something totally different. It's this kind of gratitude that no person in this world can possess except for the Lord's devotee. You will not find it in any other person. Every good person in this world should be grateful, can be grateful for all the wonderful things in their life. But it is only someone as extraordinary as the Lord's pure devotee who will be grateful for all that is terrible in their life. Why? Not just because it has brought them closer to Krishna, but because it has provided them an opportunity to know Krishna, to relate to Krishna, to receive attention from Krishna in a way that no one else can, that he gives to no one else. And this is something we can experience in our own lives. We all have lives, situations, moments, experiences where we have felt crushed, we have felt lost, we have felt destroyed. But over the course of a lifetime, as those experiences pile up and pile up more and more, we come to a point where we're able to look back at those experiences and say, Krishna, not only was that good, but thank you for all of that. Because through that, through those experiences, I have come to know you better. You know, in family life, in marriage, when a husband and wife first get married, initially there is this euphoria of love. There is this attraction for each other, this passion, where you cannot stay away from that other person. And there's great excitement. And when we feel it, we think, this must be love. And okay, it's nice. And yes, there's some reflection of love there. But as the years go by, and we go through so much in life, you know, the struggles, the kids come, we struggle with them, the sleepless nights, the health challenges, the financial issues. Anyone who is a grihastha, you know what I'm talking about. The challenge, one after another, after another, after another. At that point, 15 years later, 20 years later, then when we speak of love, it means something completely different. Completely different. Why? Because now this is not a love of fascination. This is a love saying, I know you. I know you very well. I know you at a very deep level. Why? Because we've been through so much together. When you know someone in hardship, you really know them. And that's what a devotee is able to say after 10, 15, 20, 30 years of service, after tolerating everything Krishna sends him through. Just 2 verses ago, Prabhupada quotes that verse in the purport, Tatte Nukampam. The devotee is able to stand before Radha Vrindavan Bihari and say, you know, I know you, Krishna. I know who you are. Why? Because you and I, we've been through a lot together. Remember that time you put me through this? Try it again. Test me again. See what happens this time. We have a lifetime's worth of experience and feeling and emotion for the Lord. When we chant our japa, as we're chanting in those holy names, we can pack those feelings, those emotions, that relationship with the Lord. Imagine when Bali Maharaj does his japa, what he feels, how he remembers the Lord. Krishna, I know you. I know you're a cheater. What does Mahaprabhu say? Lampato. I know you, Krishna. I know your character. I know you're a debauchee. I know you're a cheater. I know you're unfaithful. I know what you can do to me. And yet, I still love you for it. I would not give up those moments for anything in this world. No one can replace that. It's the most valuable thing you've given to me. Why? Because in those moments, I know that I had you, that you were mine. And that is more valuable than anything. This is why Queen Kunti is able to pray, Vipadasantu Tashashvat Tatra Tatra Jagadguru. Krishna, let those calamities come again and again and again. She's not a sadist. She's not a masochist. She's not saying, give me more trouble because I enjoy the pain. No, the pain is painful. Even for a devotee, the pain is painful. It's there. It's a reality. It hurts. She's not saying, give me more pain because I love pain. No, she's not a martyr. It's because she's thinking back at all those moments that Krishna put her through. And she's thinking, in those moments, I came to know something about you. Our relationship grew to the next level. Because you do not understand another person unless you walk the path of thorns with them. Ram and Sita's relationship is seen not at Sita Swayamvar. It's seen when they walk Dandakaranya forest together. Not even in the first 13 years, you don't know what is Ram and Sita's relationship. What stories do you know from the first 13 years in the forest? Nothing, right? Yes, we know it was beautiful on the banks of the Sarayu. Everything was nice. They were going picking flowers in the forest. But when we really understand what is Sita's feeling for Ram and what Ram feels for Sita is when they walk the path of thorns in Dandakaranya forest. That's when we understand who they are. And this is why a devotee is grateful for all the suffering that Krishna puts him through. Is because when we walk the path of thorns with Krishna, when we struggle with him, then we are able to look at him and say, I know you, Krishna. I know who you are. I know how you operate. I know how much you care about me. And the devotee's heart overflows with gratitude at that point. A devotee feels so deeply, thank you, Krishna. Not for the great joys of what? Not for Sutala. Not for Swarga, but for this that you have given me, this trouble, this difficulty, this suffering. And in that gratitude, the devotee thinks, how could I possibly repay Krishna for what he has given? And so, a devotee gives his whole life for the service of the Lord. Krishna, take everything I have. Take my money, take my family, take me, take my ego, take my body's energy, take everything. And as you give everything, you think, finally, the scales are balanced. Your heart gets some relief, thinking, I've done it. I've repaid the Lord. Until the next moment, when Krishna does something to give back with so much force, and so wholeheartedly that he places the devotee yet again in a state of complete debt. And that's what's happening at this moment. Krishna has taken everything away. And even before he gave anything, Bali Maharaj is crying tears of joy. Thank you, Krishna, for bringing me under your lotus feet, for tying me up and forcing me to go nowhere. Finally, I don't have to pretend to not be your devotee. Finally, I don't have to act like I'm the king of the daityas. Now they all know I'm your servant. I don't have to offer obeisances in my mind anymore. I can finally do it physically. Thank you. You've ended my professional life. And that's enough. And he thinks, and I've given myself to Krishna, the scales are balanced now. And then Krishna turns around and he says, "No, no, 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 no. Now I want to give you Sutala. How about I become your personal bodyguard and stand day and night at your door looking after you? I want to do that for you." And again, he's in debt. What can he say at this point? There's no words to express. How else are you going to show your gratitude? For the pain Krishna has given him, he's so grateful that he's given his body, mind, words, everything. Now Krishna gives him more. What will he say? What will he do? He has nothing, nothing to give the Lord. And therefore, he ends with just this one verse. Because in the end, the only thing the devotee has left to offer the Lord is his own gratitude. That's it. Nothing more is left. So, I think we'll stop here. It's a beautiful verse. And my hope, my goal was to help you see the impact of this verse by seeing what comes before it. Only when we understand what is packed up into these few words, all the emotion, all the sense of gratitude and pain, and there's so much that's packed up into these words. When I was a child, we used to read Bhagavatam. Then the prayers were always something that, you know, we were completely bored by. It was like, "Oh my God, obeisances to you, O Lord, maintainer, creator, destroyer of these worlds, and you this, that." I've heard it so many times. Where's the fighting coming? Where is it? It's natural for children. But now, the prayers are the best part. They're the juiciest parts of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, you read this one prayer, and you see what's there. Amazing how much is packed up into it. And then Prabhupada's purports, where he's giving us the depth of the psychology that is there in the devotee's heart. So anyway, I'll stop here. They told me to end at 8:45, so I think I have 5 minutes if anyone has any questions or comments or thoughts that they want to add. Hari Vamshavru.
Thank you, Radhika Raman Prabhu. As always, your class is very amazing narration and full of, it's exuding with devotion. So thank you very much. So many great points were there, but one which stuck with me and I want to ask a further elaboration on that was the role of Brahma. You mentioned about the elders playing an important role. And I wanted to ask you if you can elaborate on this elder. Because in the modern world today, with postmodernism, etc., often elder are those who would play the role of, you know, balancing everything, are those who have great achievements, or those who have done a lot, or who are doing a lot. I believe there is something about age. You also mentioned that unless you, nobody can beat the time, what you get with time. And in traditional societies in India, Asia, other places, even in Middle East, elders were given role who have been there, who have gone through the thicks and thins of life, and we call them varisht, right? Varisht Vaishnavs here. I feel that in modern 21st century, perhaps we are moving away from, there is a tendency to move away, and we don't give that much importance to age factor. And it may also happen that even in our family, our parents, grandparents and things like that, we may discount their age and experience for various reasons. So I want to ask your comments on this, and if you think that makes sense, then what can be done pragmatically to have that tradition back?
So, wonderful question. Age is a very powerful thing in terms of giving us life experience, right? Now, for that reason, age always has to be respected. There's no doubt about that. There's two factors, though, in life that make person truly an elder: experience and knowledge. Both of these are very powerful on their own, but when put together, they become amazing. They become irresistible. You see, on their own, there's no guarantee of them being useful: experience and knowledge. Why? Experience is something that comes for free in this world. We just have to live, and we'll get so much experience. And they say experience is the best teacher, but only when it is combined with knowledge. Otherwise, we can experience unlimited kicks in this world, and we will not come to the point of Bali Maharaj. It is not that Bali Maharaj is the only one who experienced this type of binding and humiliating and all of that. So many people do in this world, but not everyone is Bali, right? When we have knowledge, we're able to take that experience and put it into proper perspective, to make sense of where it is coming from, why it is happening, and what I am meant to learn from it. And we're able to grow into the next experience and build ourselves. But without it, it can be simply stumbling our way through the world. An alcoholic gets so many amazing experiences, but doesn't learn from it, right? Similarly, knowledge without experience can also be shallow and can often result in pride. What happens is when there's no experience, we become proud of our knowledge. Why? Because we don't realize that we haven't yet suffered the beatings of the material world. If you've been through the beatings of the material world, you know, my knowledge is not going to save me. It's there, it's useful, but ultimately the Lord is in control. It's not me. So knowledge, experience combined with knowledge provides this wonderful combination where it gives us the ability to help others, but with humility, because we have been through it ourselves. It's not just theoretical knowledge, but it's knowledge with that experience. And that becomes a very, very valuable gift. So when Tamal Krishna Maharaj left this world, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj wrote a very beautiful tribute to him in Journal of Vaishnava Studies, where he talks about how in any society, anthropologists will tell you, there are four categories of people that you need in order for society to be healthy. You need the children, you need young people, you need elders, and you need ancestors. And he says, you need the children because they provide hope and energy. They provide a sense, a reason for everyone to work hard, because this is the future we want to protect. These are the people we want to leave a good world to. Right? So you need the children to inspire. You need the youth to do the work, because they've got the energy and they've got ambition and they want to do something. And you need the elders to provide this element of advice and generosity and stability. And you need the ancestors to give the society a sense of collective pride. That's something we have to live up to. We have to live up to the memory of our ancestors. Just like Bali Maharaj in this story, he's remembering Prahlad and Virochan and thinking, this is what I have to live up to. This inspires him to do his best. And Krishna Kshetra Maharaj laments that he's speaking to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. It's so unfortunate that you went from youth to being our ancestor, that we lost you as an elder, because this is so valuable. And he talks about how in our ISKCON society, this is what is so, we are so short on this, that we are not lacking, but there's not enough elders. We have the most amazing ancestors in our movement, isn't it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, people whose memory we can live up to, whom we want to please. And we have wonderful youth. Our temples are full of young devotees, full of energy, ready to serve and dedicate their lives. But how many elders do we have? Very, very few. We will get more by Krishna's grace as the society ages, because everything began in the 60s. Now finally we're getting our first wave of elders. But it becomes so important to support them, to take care of them, to look after them, because their gift to the society, this knowledge and experience combined, cannot be given by any of the other three sections of society. Only they can give that. Yeah? Thank you. Therefore, the Rupa and Sanatana were Dhira, Dhira, Janapriyo. They were dear to Dhira and Adhira, because they were elders. This is who had knowledge and experience. And everyone likes them. Yes, Mataji.
So you almost poetically, you could hear what I was saying before,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, what I was going to say was you almost poetically explained the beauty of how our relationship grows with Krishna because of the experiences he very mercifully puts us through. So, and we wouldn't want to interrupt in that relationship which is coming about. And I'm sure that being the main purpose of him doing it in the first place, that's how I've always seen everything in my life also. So I understand that not a blade of grass moves without his sanction. So when it's happening upon us, then it's all fine, you know, because you can internalize, you know, you can go deeper within yourself and you can, if you so allow, make the most of that situation spiritually. But sometimes when you see somebody else going through it, then, you know, there may be a little ache in the heart. And they may be very fine, but then we might be thinking. And sometimes even on social media, Facebook, devotees will put up a, would you please pray for this devotee because they're going through this, this, this. So I think my question probably is, just because I would like to hear from you, because I know how you would take the whole thing, what would you say about us therefore praying for others when they are going through something? And then there's that element of the pain that they are going through, and obviously the point that you elaborated on, that that's a relationship thing. If you could elaborate on that, please.
Yes. First of all, I want to say that thank you for that wonderful question, and thank you for your appreciation. First of all, I should say that this vision of gratitude for the difficulties that we go through is typically something that we are gifted in hindsight. It's only a very, very rare devotee who can see that and be grateful for it in the moment as it's happening. Most of the time, we look back in our lives. Sometimes it takes 20, 30 years, but sometimes it can happen faster, 10 years, 5 years, 2 years. We get better at it, where we're able to look back at it, and eventually, we can even do it in real time. But it takes a lot of effort to. So usually, we should not be disappointed. We should not be disappointed if in the moment we don't react in the way that we want to react. Sometimes, as devotees, we can punish ourselves. That, oh, how can I feel like this? You feel upset. How could you do this, Krishna? But we should not feel upset. Right? It's okay. It takes time to come to that point. The main thing is that we don't ignore Krishna. In the moment of our tribulation, of our trials, if we go in front of Krishna, and even if we're angry at him, it's okay. Because it's a relationship, right? And relationship means that it's going to be not all roses. There are times in Ramayana, even Mother Sita is angry at Ram after Agni Pariksha. She's upset. She's speaking very strong words to him. This is the nature of a relationship. Sometimes we feel so upset at what Krishna is putting us through or someone we love through that. And we're not feeling a sense of gratitude. it's okay. The main thing is we don't walk away from Krishna. Better we go in front of Krishna and we express our anger. How could you do this? After all the service that I've put in, or even better yet, this devotee has put in, you know they're sincere servants. They've been serving you for years, and this is how you treat them? Being angry at Krishna is not a bad thing. Because why? We're still treating Krishna as a person. And that's what we're after as devotees. We want to see Krishna as a person. Ignoring Krishna means we're impersonalists, or worse, atheists. Actually, impersonalist is worse than atheists. At least the atheist is personal towards Krishna. But our goal as devotee is that we want to be personal with Krishna. So I've personally been in a situation where someone I deeply care about or love is put through a lot of difficulty. And while I know that they will see it in a good way because they're devotees, I don't feel happy. I feel that they don't deserve what they're going through after everything they've done to Krishna. And so you find yourself standing before the Lord and saying, what are you thinking? But that's okay. That's okay. We don't have to be grateful immediately. So long as we continue to be personal to the Lord. We can be angry with Him. We can be happy with Him. We can have a dialogue with Him. We can be slightly, you know, energetic towards the Lord. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, Asura sakal pailo charana vinoda thakilo boshi. He says to Krishna, he says, all the asuras have pailo charana. They have achieved your lotus feet. And me, Bhaktivinoda, is still sitting here waiting for your mercy. What is this? He's arguing with Krishna, no? He's upset. He's like, come on. These demons are all going back to Godhead. And here I am trying to be your devotee. I'm not even fighting with you. And I'm still sitting here, boshi. Still waiting. So it's okay. A devotee has every kind of emotion towards Krishna. I don't want our discussion to make it seem like a devotee is constantly just in a state of, okay, whatever, Krishna, you come, I'm so grateful. It's not a one-sided relationship. A devotee experiences every kind of emotion in relation to Krishna. Love, anger, desire, fear, everything is there. It's a full relationship. When it comes to other people, there a devotee doesn't need to be accepting of everything. Why? Because Krishna says in the Gita, Nashochati Nakangshati, we don't lament and we don't hanker. But in Bhagavatam, he says exactly the opposite in relation to others. But when it comes to others' suffering, the devotee shochati, he says, the same word, laments when other people are in pain, and hrishyati, is happy when other people are unhappy. This is the nature of a devotee, right? So this discussion is in relation to ourselves. When it comes to others, that's the real use of our sense of lamentation, our sense of argument with Krishna. Please, Krishna, help this person because I can't see them suffer. That's the heart of a Vaishnava, para dukkha dukhi.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, that's really wonderful. That's just making me further think that actually that the original question I wanted to ask, I didn't. So you've just helped me remember my actual question, which is, then are we interfering? So you explain how the relationship grows because of what both of them go through, right? Like Krishna and the devotee. So then are we interfering in Krishna's plan for that devotee when we are praying for that devotee?
No.
Are we interfering in the way he wants the relationship to go? Are our prayers going to interfere?
No, no. You see here, so many devotees are praying on behalf of Bali Maharaj. Yes, Brahma is coming and saying, Krishna, enough. Prahlad Maharaj is doing so also indirectly. He's come to offer not just prayers to the Lord, but to offer support to his grandson, because his grandson has remembered him. The Lord didn't remember Prahlad. Bali remembered Prahlad. So everyone is here supporting Bali Maharaj, and that too is the plan of the Lord. The Lord expects that we will intervene on behalf of others. Why? Because this is the nature of a devotee. So he expects that one of us will speak up, that one of us will pray on behalf of a devotee. Because this is the devotee's nature. Prabhupada says very clearly, a devotee is more compassionate than the Lord himself. So Krishna waits to get a cue from his devotee when enough is enough. He's waiting that someone will speak up, then I know. I have to show my mercy. Isn't it? This is why we are recipients of the Lord's mercy. Because someone has spoken up on our behalf. Srila Prabhupada has told the Lord, no, this person is deserving of your mercy. Please give him your mercy. That is why we are recipients. If the devotees were not there to intervene, we would still be suffering in the material world. We would not be recipients of mercy because we don't deserve that mercy. Krishna says, Kshipam yajasram ashubhan asuri shveva yonishu. On his terms, we deserve again and again, Kshipam yajasram. We deserve continuously to be thrown into the depths of material existence. That's what we deserve. But we don't get it because a devotee says, no, Krishna, this is enough. This person is sincere. Please help him. So this is the cooperation between Krishna and his devotee. When he sends Srila Prabhupada into this world, when the devotees walk this planet, it's because they are giving cues to Krishna, saying, with this person, Lord, time is up, enough. Please give him your mercy. So not only are we not interfering, but we are participating in the plan of the Lord. Krishna expects this from us. Anyone else? 2 more minutes. Anyone else have questions? Yes, Prabhu.
So what really was the turning point? Was it Brahma? Intervention or Bali's heart full of gratitude in this verse?
We cannot know exactly what is that turning point, because it's within the mind of the Lord and the mind of the devotee. But few things we can say, multiple turning points. One is that Bali Maharaj truly surrenders at this point. Giving up all his material possessions, as I was saying, was not the point of real surrender. It was when he gave up his own ego as the charity giver, as the one in control. That's when he surrendered his false ego. So that became the turning point from Bali Maharaj's side. From the other spectator's side, it was Brahma's intervention that caused the turning point, because he came, and I was saying the Lord waits for cues from his devotees to know when to show mercy and when to not. And thirdly, it was also the Lord's own understanding of the situation. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada is saying in this purport, he says so beautifully, actually, this is a nice point to end. He says twice, he says, the Lord takes the essence of one's devotional mentality. This is a very carefully chosen set of words, and Prabhupada uses it twice. He takes the essence of the Lord, of the devotee's mentality. Means what? The devotee's mentality, when we're not yet pure, can have multiple things in it. We're coming to do kirtan before the Lord. Why? To please Krishna. That's why we're coming. But while doing kirtan, our mind may also think, I'm doing great kirtan. I wonder whether the devotees are having fun or not. Are they appreciating my... Some little selfish desire may show up for prestige. I'm wonderful kirtaniya. And the focus might shift. The mentality might shift on myself. Or in the middle of kirtan, we might think, oh, time's up. I got to go do my seva, this, that. And our attention might shift. Or we might get distracted by the opposite sex. As devotees, we go in with a certain mentality, But that mentality is always mixed with so many different layers of things. So what should Krishna take? Right? Is it my desire for, I want to be the best kirtaniya? Or is it my attraction to that beautiful lady or man in the room? What is it Prabhupada is specifying here? Bhava grahi janardana doesn't mean that Krishna just takes your entire bhava, because that's too problematic. That's really confusing. What is your bhava? Yeah? No one knows. Even we don't know what is my bhava for the Lord. We're confused. So Krishna is so expert, like a swan. He says he takes bhava grahi janardana means he takes the essence of a devotee's mentality. That is our only hope. That is our hope in Krishna consciousness. That as we're doing kirtan, Krishna ignores the distraction, ignores the desire for prestige, ignores everything else our mind is doing and says, oh, this person came to please me. I know that's why he's doing sankirtan. And says, let me give him the fruit for that. So at this point, Krishna is recognizing in Bali Maharaj. He's seeing, I understand the essence of his mentality. Okay, maybe he had some desire for the heavens, heavenly planets. I'll give him that. Now you can be king of heaven. Maybe you had some desire to control the demons, to be king. Okay, I'll give you that. No one will cross you because my chakra will be there. Maybe you had this desire to be seen as, to be known as a great charitable person. Okay, I'll fulfill that. Let all the three worlds come and see how you are the most charitable. Everyone is there, right? So Krishna takes, he sees, okay, maybe Bali Maharaj had some little feeling here, some desire here, some mixed up bhava might be there. Dhruva Maharaj did. But at this point, Krishna has decided, all of that I will ignore, and I will take just the essence of your mentality. You want to surrender to me, right? That's what you really wanted to do when you went against Shukracharya. So fine, I'll fulfill that. The time has come. I will claim you now as my devotee. You are mine now. And that's the turning point. Thank you all so much for your attention today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.